Welcome to the Modern MBA podcast with Marie Kerwin and Kristen Rossi. Our mission is to help MBAs coming from, going into, or merely considering more unorthodox career paths. We're a community to find inspiration and share stories.
Today's Modern MBA podcast is a special collaboration with MBAGradSchools.com. We're speaking with Maxine Fish, a British-Canadian studying at Holt Business School in London. She shares with us her global experience working in public health, what it's like as a British Army reservist, and tips for starting an MBA program.
Can I ask you, first of all, to share your name, where you're from, and where you're doing your MBA?
So my name is Maxine Fish, although I go by Max, and I'm from Toronto, Canada, and I'm currently doing my MBA at Holt International Business School at their London campus.
And so Max, you studied anthropology and you're from Canada, and then you've also lived and worked in London, South Africa, and I think Indonesia as well. So can I ask you just to kind of walk us through your career path to date?
Sure. So my career path is a little bit all over the place. So I did a BA in social anthropology at McGill University in Montreal. And I then moved to London to do my Master of Science in Medical Anthropology, which is a division of public health. And in the summer between the first and second year of my master's degree, I took on a research internship position at a hospital in Cape Town. And I was collecting data for a cardiothoracic surgeon, but it ended up being a little bit of medical skill as well. So it was an amazing summer and it solidified my interest in public health. But then it also confirmed I didn't want to pursue a career in medicine, which I think is just as important a lesson to learn what you definitely don't want to do. And then when I graduated, I went to work for a small consulting agency and was sent to do a finance project in Jakarta, which is the capital in Indonesia. I then did a second project for them in healthcare, which is kind of more what I was interested in. And at the time, Indonesia had just switched from a private healthcare system to two-tier. So all the private healthcare agencies in the country were trying to figure out how to make their services more appealing to communities who could finally afford to see a doctor, oftentimes for the first time. And it was a brilliant project and an amazing opportunity, really. So then when I returned to the UK, and this was in 2018, I took on a role in educational tech as an account manager. Which was a great stepping stone, kind of getting my previous role at a medical tech startup called MedShare. And that was the company that I just left to start my MBA. And I did both account management and operationals and strategy.
Excellent. Okay. That's really interesting. So I spent the last few years prior to my MBA in Singapore. And I didn't know that Indonesia had switched their healthcare system like that. That must have been a really interesting time to be in the country and working on those kind of projects.
You know, it's amazing that the government said, look, okay, we need to change our strategy here. Not enough people are getting access to adequate healthcare, which is an amazing step. But also nothing really in terms of public infrastructure was changed. So no new hospitals were built, for example, and no GP clinics were set up. So all of a sudden you had hospitals that were seeing, you know, two or three times as many patients, but just didn't have the capacity. And that's when a lot of these private healthcare companies and labs, for example, saw that there was an opportunity, but they didn't quite know how to advertise and how to reach people who may have a mistrust in doctors and healthcare practitioners, or just simply didn't know where to go to get seen.
Obviously, Jakarta, South Africa, both quite sort of different working environments. I'm just curious to know how you found those experiences of working overseas.
I loved it. And I come from quite a multinational family. I'm a bit of a third culture kid. My mother's from France and my father's South African. So growing up, we moved quite often. So I like to think that gave me a little bit of an advantage in kind of just learning to go with the flow a little bit more, relaxing, and being more open to different cultures. But it was also exhausting. In Jakarta, it would take me sometimes 3 hours in traffic to get to and from the office each way, which is, you know, not really a great way to start and finish your day when you're tired and you just want to go to bed. The red tape, not being able to speak a local language, looking and feeling different from locals, can be difficult, especially in terms of in a business setting, trying to connect with people. I was 24 years old and trying to convince, especially on the finance project I took on, I was 24 years old trying to explain to grown-ups, really, what they felt like to me, that they should take me seriously and take my work seriously. And they'd been working in finance for 30 years, longer than I'd been on the planet. So I think whilst it was amazing to kind of immerse myself in different cultures, it was also incredibly difficult and tiring to place myself in a position that allowed people to feel like I was on their side and that I could be trusted and that what I was doing was serious and that I was taking pride in my work and I was not there to mess about, really.
What about the MBA itself? What was it that made you decide to join an MBA program, and why did you choose Holt International Business School?
So I chose to pursue an MBA because I realized that whilst I had the healthcare expertise in my previous role at a medical tech startup, on some projects, I lacked kind of what I would call the business acumen and tools to oversee projects. So I decided to complete a project management certification at the University of Westminster, you know, just the Prince 2, which definitely helped, but I still felt that some of my accounting and Excel skills were really lacking. So often I'd have ideas for projects and I'd go to my boss and say, look, I think that if we do this, it's going to be amazing. It's really going to put us ahead of our competitors. And he would say, fantastic. Yeah, put together a business proposal for me. I want to see the budget. I want to see your game plan. And I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't know where to start. And I wasn't sure what kind of tools I would need to employ in order to kind of make it a good business case. And so I ended up having a conversation with him at the time. He had also completed an MBA at Cambridge. And then I also spoke to some friends who'd chosen to do the same degree. And it really seemed like a great way to kind of set myself apart from other public health peers and also make a stronger case for my own career, really.
Yeah. Okay. So it was very much kind of a skills driven piece.
Yes, absolutely. I felt like I had the public health knowledge, I knew what I wanted to get done, and I just wasn't sure what the steps were that I needed to take in order to get there.
Okay. And what about the school that you're at, say Holt International Business School, what was it that made you choose that program specifically?
So I chose Holt for a few reasons. The first is that they have accreditation in both the US and the UK, which is quite appealing. As a Canadian citizen, I have, you know, a few ideas about potentially working in the US in the future. So being able to say, well, I went to an American university at their London campus is quite strong. In addition, the option to travel to other Holt campuses for summer electives is really appealing. So you do your first two semesters at your home campus, and then you can pick and choose different electives in the summer, and you can go to the other campuses which are dotted around the world. So there's San Francisco, Boston, New York, London, Shanghai, and Dubai. So it offers amazing opportunities to travel and see other cities and also work with other MBA peers that you haven't necessarily had the opportunity to meet in person on your home campus. We're also going to Dubai in May for a case competition style week with all of the other MBA students from across all the other campuses. So the flexibility and the diversity of the student body was something that I thought I could really benefit from.
Yeah, that's awesome, particularly the international opportunities. Like, I know that most schools will generally offer something, but it's great that it's such a really big part of the program and you get to build that like international network as well.
Absolutely. And from day one at Holt, they really drive home this idea of applying a growth mindset, which is basically accepting that there are some things that are going to be difficult, but the best way to get through them is to kind of take it on and say, okay, look, this is going to be difficult. This might be a bit painful at first, but if I just accept that this thing is going to happen and I can potentially learn from it and I can take away things from it, it's going to make it a hell of a lot easier. So it has been quite difficult, but at the same time, the fact that there's so many other students that are experiencing living in London for the first time, they obviously have a much tougher go of it than I do, as I've been living in London for the last 5 years. So there are certain things that I definitely have an advantage of, but there are other things that, you know, I can certainly learn from them and go to their home countries and have the opportunity to kind of network at such a global level. Super appealing for me.
And so what about like the actual program itself? Kind of how's your experience been, and are there any particular challenges that you faced?
I would say any MBA student that says it's a walk in the park is absolutely lying to you. There's definitely classes that are more enjoyable than others, but that's just because it allows you to play on your strengths. So project management for me was amazing because I had already been a consultant and done project management as my job. So that was amazing. And I was able to impart more knowledge on my teammates and kind of be the leader in the group. But then there are other classes, like we just finished accounting, and that's where I really struggle. I struggle with math. I always have. And it's something that I never thought that I would do after high school. I really did think I would never have to look at a balance sheet ever. And obviously I was wrong. It was grueling work, but definitely worth it in the long run. And in the end, I actually didn't do as bad on my midterm as I thought I would. I got a B on that midterm and it felt so good. I've realized that you have to celebrate the little things. So I popped a bottle of champagne for that B on that midterm, which I've never done because I've always liked to think I was a straight A student, but it really was worth celebrating. I was borderline in tears. I was so happy about it.
Yeah, good for you. Like thinking that you're done with maths. I was very happy to kind of finish up with it at 16. I was like, I'll never need any of this again. And then the GMAT came along. So that was, that was a fun experience.
You studied in both Canada and the UK. How would you say the learning experience is different in the UK compared to Canada?
So I would have to say right off the bat that if there's a student that looks for more of a traditional, quote unquote, you know, collegiate varsity experience, Canada is definitely better suited. So I found that there was more of a sense of school spirit, team camaraderie at McGill, which is the Canadian university I did my undergrad at. But, you know, going to a university in a city like London is amazing. It's a gorgeous city. You're so close to the rest of Europe. And then in terms of the teaching style, my classes at McGill were a lot larger. You're definitely a little bit more of a number. Whereas in London, I've been able to foster more personal relationships with my professors and my teaching assistants.
No, absolutely. I agree. I come from the States and it's definitely a different feeling. Actually, Marie, that makes me curious. Are there any universities in the UK that are quite collegiate and very much passionate about their sports teams?
Yeah, it's just not a thing. If you go to a university that has like a college system, so Oxbridge or Durham, where they divide people into colleges, then you'll sometimes get like a bit of kind of rivalry between the colleges themselves. But it's just, yeah, I always, like when I grew up, like watching US TV shows and stuff, I was like, why do they all care so much about the university? This is really weird. And it's just, yeah, it's just very different.
Definitely. Yeah, I was on the cheerleading team at UCL, where I did my Master of Science. And I thought, right, this is going to be just like being a varsity athlete back in Canada. You know, people will respect me. People will fear me as a cheerleader. And most UCL students that I met didn't even know that we had a competitive cheerleading team. And I was like, yes, we perform at varsity. We perform at the Saracens Rugby Stadium. We travel all over the country to compete against other universities. We have a fund. What are you talking about? We're sponsored by Deliveroo. Are you kidding me? So it definitely feels like there's a bigger divide in between the students that are there to study and the students that are there to also, you know, kick a ball about, have a little bit more fun. Whereas in Canada, I think the two are slightly closer together.
And going back to your career, I saw on your profile you're a British Army reservist. What made you join? What's the experience like?
Yes, so I'm currently serving as a combat medic in training with the London Scottish, and they're an infantry regiment based here in London. And I joined predominantly because of my heritage. So my father's South African, and he served in the Army in his 20s. And listening to his stories growing up, I really wanted to have those similar experiences, you know, those tales of adventure and meeting new people and traveling and all those things that, you know, dads kind of like to talk about, relive their glory days. And then I came back from Jakarta and I started working a slightly more stable schedule. You know, the consultant's lifestyle is you work all weekend, you work late nights, and it is true. And I got back to London and I was working a little bit more of a 9-to-5. And I've always been on a competitive sports team or done something active. And I thought, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. I cannot go to work 9-to-5 and then go to Soul Cycle on Saturday and have brunch with the girls. I need something a little bit more. And so I did a Prince 2 qualification, that wasn't enough. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll become a, you know, a personal trainer, but then I didn't want to do that. And I thought, okay, there's, what else can I do? And coming from public health, I've always been fascinated with healthcare. And I really wanted to learn more practical skills to go alongside my public health knowledge. And so I thought, maybe I'll become a medic through St. John's Ambulance, but you had to pay to do that. And it was late nights in the evenings, and it wasn't going to work with my work schedule. And then I was talking to another friend who said, well, why don't you join the army? They pay you, and it's a great way to keep fit and learn new skills. And so I thought, great. And I walked into a recruiting office one day, and I explained my situation, what I was looking for. And there was a sergeant there who said, well, would you like to look into becoming a combat medic? And I said, yeah, that sounds great. And so I've been doing that a little over a year now. And it's been fantastic. It's been difficult. You go on these camps, these trips out to barracks, and you don't sleep very much over 2 weeks, and you get shouted at a little bit, and there's a lot of crawling around the dirt. But it's been fantastic. So as a reservist, you can be deployed if you choose to. But you also have the opportunity to learn new skills that a civilian career would never provide. So, for example, weapons handling or other technical skills that you might want to dip your toe into but have never had the opportunity. So I usually train one evening a week and one weekend a month. And so for me, it's a great way to keep learning, but also take a break from my day job. It really allows me to shut my brain off a little bit. And I've ended up meeting people I'd never have had the opportunity to meet otherwise, who have so many experiences and life stories. And it's been fantastic. You know, being in the Army, regardless of your rank. So I am a private, which is the lowest level soldier that you can be. It really requires you to display a certain set of skills and leadership abilities that I found that employers are often looking for, without actually saying, we want somebody that's diligent and scheduled and understands how to organize a team and can inspire other people to be willing to roll up their sleeves and, you know, put in the hard work. And it's definitely helped my decision-making skills in the office. And I think, I like to think at least, that my manager has noticed that kind of development in me as an employee.
Absolutely. We've talked to several people that have come from the military and done an MBA or done the MBA at some point. And I definitely think the military provides you with certain skills that are very transferable and very sought after in the business world. You had mentioned, we read in your background that you were in project management. You also mentioned in healthcare and consulting. Where do you go from here?
It's a really good question. I think the best part of my previous roles have always been the operational tasks. So I've realized that I love breaking down problems and then figuring out which employees and teams are best suited to effectively provide a solution. So I'm looking to stay in medical tech or public health and gradually make a shift from account management and that kind of support role slowly into operational management. And in the UK, as I'm sure you know, we're so lucky to have the NHS. Our National Health Service, and I would really love to play an integral role in supporting the healthcare workers and ensuring that they're fairly represented and supported in their careers, which is something I think I'd be very good at tackling.
Any tips you have for prospective international MBAs looking to study in the UK?
Yes. So first of all, it's important for me to note that I was born here in the UK to immigrant parents. So I hold British citizenship. So I'm very lucky that I didn't have to go through the visa application process myself, but I have many friends that have done, and obviously it takes time and it can be super frustrating. So if I could offer a piece of advice to international students, and I think also locals or European citizens who don't have to worry as much about the visa process, it would be to do your research. And to work backwards. So you know that if you have to have something done by September 1st, that you need to work backwards and figure out, estimate that time that it'll take you to get all those steps in place, so that by the time you arrive on campus September 15th, your life is sorted. You don't have to worry about things. So I've even told, last week I spoke to some prospective students at HULT, and I said to them, if you're moving from home and you know that class starts September 15th, don't give yourself 3 days to settle into your flat and then you'll start on the Monday. It doesn't work like that. You need a month to furnish an unfurnished apartment. You need 2 weeks for the bank to verify that you live there, and you need another 2 weeks to get your Wi-Fi and your cell phone plan set up. You're probably going to have, you're most likely going to realize half the clothes you brought are not London winter appropriate. That takes time and budget. And so even those little things, so you think that maybe the visa process is the only thing you have to tackle, the only paperwork, but actually it's a lot larger than that. So my biggest piece of advice would be to do your research and work backwards. Figure out what you need and how long each step is going to take you, and go backwards from there. What also is included in the do your research is to speak to current MBA students in that program. To do that research, and I always tell people, be wary of social media, because a lot of universities, even amazing universities, a lot of their social media stuff is smoke and mirrors. They won't tell you about how long the visa process is. They won't tell you how difficult it can be to live in zone one and two in London, how expensive it can be. So if you go onto LinkedIn or onto other MBA platforms, it's a great place to send someone a message and say, look, this is who I am. I see we have similar backgrounds. Would you be able to give me 15 minutes of your time? Most of us are more than happy to speak, you know, we're happy to do that because we were also in that position. So I think that is also part of the do your research bit, because what you don't want is to put all your time and money and effort and love into an application that you, for a dream school, show up and be miserable. It's awful. It's a huge commitment. And so it really needs to be considered from all sides, including what it's going to be like living in that city and what you're going to be able to get up to outside of campus.
Absolutely. I mean, I think definitely how you set up your environment will impact your learning, will impact what you get out of the MBA experience. They do go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. There's a trend that I've seen on campus, and I spoke to a peer of mine last week about it, is that there are two kinds of students in the MBA program that I've seen. And the first, which I'm trying my best to be a part of, are the students that treat their MBA like a full-time job. If you treat it like a 9-to-5, if you have that discipline, the rest of your day, the rest of your week, the rest of your semester really falls into place quite nicely. You have that time to then go to the gym, to cook proper meals, to do social activities, to travel on weekends, if that's something that you're able to do in a post-COVID world. And because what you don't want is to be one of those students that says, okay, I've only got 2 hours of class today, so I'm only going to be on campus for those 2 hours, and then I'm going to go home and watch Netflix. And then I know that I can just write my paper that's due next week on the weekend. You don't want to be one of those students that writes a paper all weekend. That's so miserable. So treating it like a day job really affords you the time to then experience the rest of the city that you're living in and participate in other on-campus activities, you know, join student politics, join internship programs like the one that I've joined, the Global Ambassador Program, after school clubs. There's so many on campus at Holt. So I think budgeting that time will really allow you to kind of get the most out of your degree.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's great. And kind of speaking about London and campus life and or just studying in London, you mentioned about living in zone one and zone two. You've lived in London for 5 years. Are there any areas you'd recommend people to look at if they don't know London and are looking to, and they can't get student accommodation, off-site areas that you'd recommend?
The first would be, you know, if you want something that is completely hassle-free and close to campus, then student accommodation is the first place to look. But realistically, that's not always afforded to you. Or if you're maybe a more mature student, you don't want to be living in university halls with 23-year-olds. I completely get that. I've been living in Camden for the last 5 years, which is the birthplace of punk rock music, and I absolutely love it. It's close to the canals. There's lots of green space. There's Primrose Hill and Regent's Park and also Hampstead Heath. And so green space is actually surprisingly quite easy to come by in such a big city. And so living close to green space is, I think, so important for your mental health. Then there's no excuse. You have to go for a walk. You have to go for a run. You can, you know, even go out for a walk and a coffee. Other than Camden, I would say Angel and Islington. Those are great places as well. Still super close to City Central. What people do make the mistake of doing is saying, I'll just live in Zone 1. That's where Soho is. You know, that's where all the nightclubs and the bars and the fun things are. Kudos to you if you can afford it. I tip my hat to you definitely, but there's not a lot of green space and it's very, very touristy because that's obviously where all the attractions are. So if you can live in Zone 2, where close to a tube station or bus station or overground, that would be my best advice. But try to live, I would say, in a place, try and if you do the commute, so if you can, if you see an apartment up for rent, do a test run, leave the apartment after you've taken a look at it and take the tube or whatever mode of public transit you want to take and see how long it takes you to get to campus. If it's more than half an hour each way, I would say potentially, you know, park it and maybe look elsewhere. What you don't want to do is be commuting an hour each way. That's awful. But definitely trial it. Do your research. Once again, there's so many platforms in London and other big cities. Rightmove, there's TP, there's and there's another student accommodation one, Flatshare. There's so many. And there's always people online that are looking for other students that are looking for other roommates. So it's easy to do.
That's great. That's really helpful. We're always interested in finding out books that MBA students are reading. They could be something you read just before the MBA, during, but any MBA related book that you found really interesting or useful that you'd recommend?
So I took a summer elective with Halt just before school started in the fall. And I took Psychology of Pricing, which is marketing and absolutely fascinating. And the same names kept coming up. So, you know, you do these case studies and you read these little Economist and Harvard Business Review blurbs, but you don't actually get to dive in. So I decided, right, I'm going to buy a classic and I'm going to read Thinking Fast and Slow. And I know everyone reads it, but it actually comes up time and time again. But I'm actually currently reading Tightrope, Americans Reaching for Hope, which is by a couple, Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn. And it's a bit of an autobiography because it's partially based on Nicholas's upbringing in the southern US. And it's an examination of the working class in the US and how the system quite often sets people up for failure. And it's fascinating. And I think when we start studying managerial economics next semester, it's going to come in handy.
That's all from today's Modern MBA podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Marie. If you like this episode, remember to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts. You can get access to articles and more great content by visiting our website, themodernmba.co.uk, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram at The Modern MBA, and Twitter at MBA Modern.
And aside from Apple Podcasts, you can also listen to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Until next time, bye.
Bye.